Good applause, please.
Thank you. Can you all hear me okay?
Yes.
Thank you so much for having me, and I want to especially thank Paul for extending the invitation. And the series has such a great reputation, and so I'm just really happy to be here. So tonight I'm going to read primarily, or actually exclusively, from the Explosive Expert's Wife. And the book is really the sort of recounts the time that my husband and I spent living in the Middle East. He started off his career as a post-blast investigator in the States, and then moved into diplomacy. So for the first part of his career, anytime there was a big bombing, he was sort of the crew on the ground on site afterwards to sort of try to figure out what happened. And then we switched to foreign service, and that has led us really all over the world, which is why we're in Oxford now. At any rate, I'm going to go ahead and start with this poem called Advice from the Predecessor's Wife. So when you move to the Middle East, I think especially as an American, people have lots of opinions, and they give you lots and lots of advice. And in this poem, you'll hear some of that. There's a couple of times that I need to pause because I can't reveal certain names in the poem, especially now that I know that it's being recorded. So to protect your safety and mine, we just won't say that. Advice from the predecessor's wife. Learn Arabic. Your husband won't have time. At Carrefour Express, aisle one is the tax-free line. For poultry, go to Swafia, the Palestinian chicken man shop. Pig, on the other hand, is impossible to find. Frozen pork sometimes turns up at the co-op. Basha, wife, is pregnant with twins. Expect to host a spa date or two for his mistress. Never make eye contact with local men. Read Married to a Bedouin, the Expert Expat Guide. Skip Queen Noor's book. She's from the Midwest. During Ramadan, Crumb's breakfast is the best. Everything else is closed. Never ride in the front of a taxi with an Arab. If you're near the embassy, avoid hailing a cab. Security says we're sitting ducks. Help in Amman runs cheap. Hire a driver, a maid, a cook. Mansef is made with lamb or goat and stewed in a hearty shamid. When dining with royalty, keep conversation neutral. At private parties, be prepared to be the only woman in the room, save the staff. Look the part, but don't show cleavage. Lipstick is fine. Laugh hard, but not too hard, at Colonel Dick jokes. Know how to properly cut and light a cigar. When talk turns to politics, smile and nod, then say something obscure in Arabic. Your husband will give you the cue. The Jords will think it cute. Never ask a woman how long her hair is under the hijab. Don't call anyone but your husband Habibi. Explore the souks, steer clear of the mosques. All Arabs hate dogs. Walk yours after dark. Comb your yard for poison and traps. Close your drapes. Western women are common victims of peeping toms. When moving among crowds, expect children and strangers to stop to stroke your hair. Always carry your passport. The number one reason a man's relieved from his post? His wife's unhappy. Avoid this from the get-go. Get a hobby. Play tennis, take a class, or find a job. The field's leveled for spouses. Here, education and experience equal nada. The work week runs Sunday to Thursday. Your husband will clock in Saturdays, Fridays too. Pack at least 4 ball gowns. Stock up on shirts with sleeves. Gunfire means graduation or congratulations, a wedding's just taken place. Don't be disturbed by the armed guards outside your apartment. Their assault rifles don't have bullets, rumor has it. Little America runs perpendicular to Ring 6, aka Cholesterol Circle. Popeyes, Burger King, Hardee's, you'll find everything you need. McDonald's Playland spans 3 upstairs levels. Ship a year's worth of ketchup, mayonnaise. Lawns are often mistaken for hookers. Consider dyeing your hair. By September or October, you'll learn to tune out the call to prayer. So I stayed blonde the whole time I was there, and I don't know what that says about me, but so that advice really revealed a lot about attitudes that we have in the States about the Middle East. And I admit that I sort of wondered what I was getting myself into. Not so much being in a foreign country or being in a Muslim country, but just as a woman traveling through the region, I kind of wondered what that would be about. How were women treated there? What was it like? How is it different than my own culture? And I soon found out. This is the opening poem in the book. It's called In Jordan's Northernmost Province. And in it, you'll hear me refer to the niqab and a jilbab. The niqab is sort of the facial covering, and jilbab is a more conservative, sort of modest form of dress. This poem is for the Middle East's first all-female demining team, a remarkable group of women that works on the Syrian border to clear out all of the mines that have been buried there. You'll also hear dragon's teeth, which is a kind of small bomblet that is meant to maim rather than kill. In Jordan's northernmost province, women go down on their knees, hovering above a map work of metalwork, brushing dust from cluster bombs like ash from flatbread. Delicate metal-filled bomblets glisten, scaring off the crows. In fields where men once braided their hair, a wife trades her niqab for goggles and armor, shifting the topmost soil from behind her rake. She knows the mines never sleep. She knows better to fear the snakes, the scorpions, heat, her brother's pasture where running water dislocates the dragon's teeth, toy-like mines disguising themselves as butterflies and yams. Shepherds herd their sheep in restricted fields, their daughters more afraid of sniffing dogs than the cross-shaped pressure plates lying in wait. Today begins where yesterday ends. Brushes, detectors, mallets, and stakes, prodding 20 square meters grain by grain, searching for wires attached at the pull switch. And the ragged finch perched on the fence post, does it prophesy something among the fruit trees? A thimble-sized device, perhaps, its firing pin needling a young boy's eyes. Who knows what the ordinary arbor holds? Hundreds of underground cages ready to unloose the claymore birds in air, their blackened gullets canting for the boy's mother, now downed in the silent grasses, as if unclasping a barb from her stocking, or bending to sweep back the wild herbs clutched at her jilbab's hem. I don't know if you've heard of the poet Bruce Snyder. He's a dear friend of mine, and I would really recommend his book, Paradise, Indiana. It's fabulous. This is Letter to Bruce in Paradise, Indiana. A worker came to measure for curtains today. It was the first time since moving here I've been alone with a local man. Asked for his opinion, he stared at his notebook and nodded, "As you like," as the Orthodox church bells began to ring. I don't understand most things. When I try to speak Arabic, my mind races towards some word locked in a coffin of glass. Where's the key? I hear you say, "Be patient, it will come." Mornings I practice the names of days. Truth is, I'm saved by the fact people here know 3 languages or more. Yesterday, a taxi driver said the kingdom is twice the size of Indiana. I've heard this before. I like to picture us there drinking margaritas by the pitcher in the study off your parents' kitchen before stumbling down the 100 or so outdoor planks that as a kid you helped your father hammer into place. We turned our backs to the lake then, remember? Before undressing, I took my glasses off. Between the sky and tree line, everything turned greenish gray, and what chirped from a far off place I couldn't see. We laughed and talked about the men we loved, wondering how to make it last. We swam without seeing what lived in the depths beneath us. Next day I planned to drive partway to Virginia, only I never told you, I kept going. Pushed on alone past the Ohio Turnpike before night pressed down and the sky above Maryland turned green, a sudden storm lashing out, rain painting the hatchbacks and two doors into makeshift rivers that spiraled toward a ditch. I couldn't hear a thing, not a horn or engine, not even the sound of my name. And I don't know why I'm telling you this, except that when I heard the nothing that was nothing, but water falling all around me, sound itself became a warning, a way of saying that when the maps collapse, we are somewhere still. I don't know the name of the place or time we'll see each other again, only that man invented the compass to pinpoint the time for prayer. That here, they say a needle dropped into a heart-shaped bowl points true north, and you were there. So when you live overseas, inevitably people start to ask for stuff. And I got the feeling that people wanted proof that I wasn't secretly on a beach in Florida. And that I actually was in Amman, Jordan. In this poem, you'll hear the word dishdasha, which is that sort of long white traditional robe that you sometimes see in Arab culture. This is they asked me to send. Coffee mixed with cardamom, Hebron glass, vases and carafes, wood inlaid with mother of pearl. They ask for bath soaps, mud masks, Dead Sea scrubs and salts, water siphoned from the baptismal site. My father's friend wants a dishdasha to parade around in at parties. I ship him a pendant to ward off the evil eye. I box up the shark tank at Le Royale, the latest news from the camps. My cousin wants a picture of me on a camel, a hookah with apple tobacco. I bubble wrap a jar of pickled pomegranate seeds, ignore his requests for Bedouin coal. Send instead a minaret, dump trucks snuffing the call to prayer. I send the air at Aaron's tomb, a vial of wind whipped across its peak. This week, much like the last, my mother demands a precise timeline detailing our stateside return. Her neighbor wants proof I'm not giving birth in a cave. I send them painted ostrich eggs, billboards of the heir apparent. My husband's aunt needs a recipe for kanafa, a rug whose threads surge seafoam and gray. I mail her a mizmaze of taxis unzipping King's Highway, the desert fish's bristling scales. And when they ask what holds us to this region, aren't we growing tired or afraid? I'll parcel the kingdom shade. I'll round up the fire balloons signaling Ramadan's end as effortlessly they drift across Citadel Hill, where teams of men drag stones to mount the Temple of Hercules, the still-standing palace dome, where tonight a low red moon is pulsing. Dead gold, dead gold, dead gold. Those were the nicest ever clapping after every poem. Jeez, just on and on. You might not clap after this one, because I'm not so pretty in this. Do you all know Petra? I think a lot of people recognize it from the Indiana Jones series. I think it's the third movie. That sort of iconic treasury. Petra itself is actually enormous. You can hike a week there and not see all of it. The structures over time are just absolutely remarkable in the ancient city. And I was probably there in the 3 years we lived in Jordan. I was there probably 10 or 12 times with visitors coming and going. And the thing to know about this poem is that when we arrived, right after we arrived, was the onset of Arab Spring. And so you could really, really see tourism take a nosedive. And so the experience of being at Petra the first couple of times and watching the sort of parade of buses come into the parking lots and letting people off, and how that dwindled over several years as tensions increased in the surrounding area and the Syrian civil war started, it really impacted the people working at Petra. There are child laborers that work half days that come in from the villages, and the boys are usually the ones that run the donkeys up to the monastery, and they figure in this poem. The only thing you really need to know, if you're sort of from the city, is that a genet is a female donkey. This is called The Ugly American. And it starts with a quote from Mark Twain, who was the first American to report on the area. And he described it in his notebook as the people as how they sprang upon a bone, how they crunched the bread we gave them. The ugly American. The boys beat the genet because they could. Out of boredom, because she was in heat, they beat her with sticks and switches and clods of dirt. Because revolution had stalled the usual parade of buses, and there were no tourists to ferry up 800 rock-cut steps to the monastery, they pinned her against a cliff and beat her. Only a woman, very pregnant, saw, who left her husband snapping photos near Kasr el Bint, left him in search of shade, somewhere to rest. And when the boys cheered and laughed and thrust their hips and whipped the genet, baiting their donkeys to mount her, the woman too picked up a stone. Though she was half a field away, she heard herself curse, think every stupid, soulless thing she'd heard about the filth born of this region. And when a man, an uncle or cousin came charging, freed the genet as it brayed, then loped, when he berated the boys, driving them off, the woman watched them saunter towards the village trail. As they joked and kicked up sand, it was then she felt deep within the sun she had forgotten. Please understand, this isn't metaphor. When I dropped the rock, I had blood on my hand. It's interesting because we think, I don't know, with a certain amount of education, we think we push past those prejudices, and then when you're in a situation where you're so angry, they can come to the surface, and it's dangerous if we think that we're better than these kind of cultural messages that we get. Let's read one for the husband. My 10-year anniversary is next week. Woo. We dated 10 years before that, so I got 2 decades with this guy. He hates the title of this book. The Explosive Expert's Wife. He comes home from the range, scorched in dirt. Home from the office, a stain on his suit. His nails are chewed. He enters the house without saying a word. He's jet-lagged again. He's got blast dust the length of his forearms and hands. Back from Sadakh, he's got sand in the shanks of his boots. He says, sorry I'm late. He's come home just to pack. A guard's found C4 stashed in a DCA trash can. He needs a haircut and shave. It's been one of those days. He says, this won't show up on the news. He's been sorting evidence. He has fresh orders from the president. Not that president. I wrote that before that president. He has fresh orders from the president. He says, I do this for us. They're booby-trapping pizza boxes and books. They're rigging plastic cars so kids will trip the switch. There's something else, he says. He's on edge again. He promises to be home by 6. He promises not to miss the latest round of tests. He's holding a daffodil tulip mix. He shakes his head. When did we run out of limes? He claims it was pilot error. He claims no one knows. He asks, did I get an urgent message from Colonel so-and-so? Straight from the Pentagon, he makes one drink after the next. He wants to know what's for supper. He asks if the oil's been changed. Screw what Fox and CNN say. It's perfectly safe to travel by train. Screw what happened on the southern coast. The casualty count could have been higher. He's leaving for Kabul again, this time for 65 days. It's better for us than Baghdad, with overtime and has pay. He'll need shaving cream and toothpaste, fresh underwear and socks. He'll need a ride to the drop-off point near the strip mall's outlet shops. He's filthy from hosing the tech team's hazmat suits. He's going to take a shower. Friday, they're predicting snow. Careful, he warns, the roads will all be slick. He gives thanks. The chicken tastes just right. The dog jumps on his lap. He strokes my arm, asks, later tonight? Napkin crumpled, he pushes back his plate. Now tell me everything, he says, about your day today. So eventually we went back. We went over with a dog and came back with two babies. That was kind of crazy. yeah, one of them was pretty little, but we came back with two babies. The last part of the book is really about the history of domestic terrorism in the United States, which we don't like to talk about because we're always pointing our finger elsewhere. But there's a very long history of it. This poem is a sonnet, and it's called The Clinic Bomber's Mother. The trick, she guesses, is be seen. Offer coffee to police. Walk among the living without thinking of the dead. Never apologize for being his mother. Keep his photos on the mantle, his boyhood room the same. Bring daisies to his plot. Ignore the other graves. Who really knows who knows? She donates blood, is comforted that strangers wear his clothes, irons linens for St. Paul's, whose confessionals have never felt so cramped. Bless me, Father, she admits, the bathroom hook still holds his towel. There's little time to think or rest. More and more, the wafer tastes like flesh. Two more. I became friends with a lot of people in Jordan, but one in particular, a woman named Rania. We became very close. I went to her wedding. Her mother unfortunately passed away while I was there, and so I attended sort of the days of mourning for that. She had her first child, as I just told you. I was pregnant twice while I was there, so we had a lot going on. I miss her very much. This is Letter to Rania in Amman. Today I took the kids by stroller past the monochromatic buildings of brick, the vinyl slick houses on cul-de-sacs, each mirroring the last. How is it a year, no more, has passed? 60-odd weeks dust-busting mac and cheese beneath the high chair, watching Dinosaur Train, Sesame Street. Fall's almost gone. The stroller crunches what's left of leaves, and the air's that pale deep blue, not unlike the sky above Amman, late October when restaurants shut down their balconies for the season. Sunday, I followed a woman through Target, feigning interest in robes to hear her speak Arabic. Ahmad or Aswad, she didn't know. When did Bonnie go? Kay said he took a UN post in Africa before Talal first spoke last spring. I imagine you walking through Abdoun as we used to the children's barber shop, the one with chairs that look like planes, Talal climbing into a booster of blue. They say things are easier in the States. In many ways, it's true. We had the whole bird trail across from Safeway to ourselves this afternoon. It's stormwater pond, just clear enough to spot an army of polywogs. Another week splitting cells and they'll push to the surface to breathe. How I worried I'd never conceive. Inshallah, you said, what will be, will be. Before long, we picnicked beneath that terebinth. In mixed up Arabic, I called the sun a giant apricot, and the old lady eating falafel laughed until she spat. I wish my mistakes were still like that. Truth is, I write 100 letters in my head I'll never send. I like to think one day our sons might meet and find words to say, even at our expense, some joke about their mothers who once were friends. Before long, the pond will turn to ice. Did I tell you we saw a fox on its bank last December? It sniffed a minute at the few geese that were left, then turned to go. Near the winterberry bush, its paw marks leaving a trail of arrows in the snow. Do you guys know the form that's called guzzle or huzzle? Have you heard of this?
No.
Oh, yes, no.
Yeah.
So it's a form that, it's a Persian form that's built in couplets, and it has a sort of couple of rules, one of which is that you have to have a refrain that drops through each of the couplets. The couplets are meant to sort of stand individually on their own, so it's anti-linear, it doesn't tell a story, it just sort of meditates and sort of circles through, circles around the refrain. And then in the very last moment of the poem, and this is the tricky part, is you have to say your own name. So, thank you again for listening tonight. You guys have made my Irish grandmother in San Francisco, who has dual citizenship, very happy. Very, very happy. This is my first trip here, and she is thrilled. So thank you. This is Expat Guzzle. Shrek. That ghost bread haunts the clay ovens of Amman. Double health and strength, sauteing in Amman. Alleys of hollyhocks, lots smoldering trash. Feral cats pick at the urban ash of Amman. Assad raises the suburbs, burning like moths. Jordan's borders rain loss on Amman. O useless cup, O spoon of dust, sun up to sundown, Ramadan in Amman. Five times called, I seldom pray, but bless the goat bell's scattering song through Amman. Leaves are turning, the king's hand is drawn, another official axed in Amman. Winter erases the pavement, whitens the grove. I trace the crest of my footprint, broken snow in Amman. This spring I'll pack our things, your fish-shaped key, my bowl cut from an olive tree in Amman. But how to carry the women unbinding their hair at the Turkish baths, their naked forms walled in by steam? How do I bottle the unsweetened scent of our son, born last fall in Amman? Some cities never leave you, perched like a sunbird, the blue mosaic dome. Backgammon ships clicking, singing home in Amman. My passport reads Shara, an Abadian god. Am I more or less American in Amman?